Well, Jennifer, I've written two books about the women who broke barriers in America. So I would do the women in politics, the women in sports, the women in journalism, the women in the military, the Nobel laureates in science. And I loved doing those stories. And the stories of the women were so interesting. And then I started focusing on Texas. And I love Texas history, which I think was really forged in the 19th century. And the spirit of Texas, which is so special. And I thought, well, why not do the book about the women who broke the barriers in Texas, really in the 19th century, when it was very tough going. I mean, these women put up with just obstacles and just tough land, harsh conditions, and yet they put a mark on Texas that was so special because they created a society. These women in the 19th century in Texas mostly came from Southern genteel families. They were educated. They had a lot of cultural talent. And they came to Texas with their husbands who were looking for the free land. And they survived these harsh conditions and made it fun. They made it gay amidst all the harshness. So I thought that there would be a great story there, and I think it is great. It's wonderful.
Well, let's go back and pick up on a couple of those points. You said that you love Texas history. I'm a native Texan. I've studied Texas history also, but I have to say a lot of these women's names were not familiar to me. I'm just wondering why we don't know the stories of some of these pioneering women and their role in shaping the state.
There's very little written about them. And that I found that it was hard doing the research to find out about the women and their struggles, because all the biographies were about the great men, and they really were great. But when I started delving into it and the letters and the diaries, the women were amazing. They were amazing in the Comanche Indian raids when they suffered huge, it was scary to even know what was happening in these Indian raids. And then when it happened, it was even worse. And the revolution and the runaway scrape, harsh conditions. I talk about Henrietta King, who helped build at one time the largest ranch in the whole world. She started life in a mud hut. Because they didn't have trees to build log cabins in the South and West. And so she started that way, and she was one of those Southern genteel women, and she fell in love with this sea captain who drank, and he was profane, and her parents did not want her to marry him, but she did, and she helped tame him, and he was such an entrepreneur at heart that she had a big part in building the King Ranch. And there are stories like this, the trail riders, the women who went on these 3 and 4 month long trail rides in West Texas when they were raising cattle on the ranches and taking them to Kansas and Colorado and Missouri. These women were hardy. One of them was LBJ's grandmother. And I learned about her from Lucy Johnson when I was getting a tour of the LBJ ranch house. And she talked about her great-grandmother. And, oh, my gosh, I said, she needs to be in the book. She's amazing. And so those were the ways that I was able to find some of these incredible, positive, can-do, spirited women who did put a mark on Texas.
Well, you've described the women who came here with their husbands, obviously the land opportunity, and each of them does have an individual story. And you've mentioned some of the commonalities, though, that they've had. Can you talk some more about some things that women during this period kind of had in common?
Well, they brought their culture And they had a positive, wonderful attitude that made them overcome the harshness of the circumstances. That was the strain that ran through these. And I look at Mary Austin Holly, for instance, who was Stephen F. Austin's cousin, and she came to Texas in 1831. And she saw that spirit in 1831. She wrote about the women who would ride with their husbands to hunt on horseback, and they would put their silk dresses in their saddlebags to go to balls at some neighbor's house miles away to have a wonderful experience. I found a letter that my great-great-grandfather wrote in 1838 to Robert Erion, who was the Secretary of State of the new republic, and he said, "Oh, we had a wonderful drop-in last week in Nacogdoches, and the fiddle was sent for, the dance commenced, and was kept up for 3 or 4 hours." And he said, "Hilarity prevails. And we just had a great time with sharing of snacks and having something to wash it down." And he said, "It was quite a carnival." I mean, 1838, we were a republic at the time, and conditions were pretty tough, but there was just this gaiety about it that struck me. And I think so much of that was forged by the women who insisted on bringing their pianos from where they lived all the way to Texas. And it would take them months to get here with it, but they would do it anyway. And so I thought it was just, it was so fun to read about this, and their stories haven't been told. And that's what I wanted to make sure is also a part of history.
You are a pioneering woman in the state of Texas. Also, you're the first woman elected from Texas to serve in the U.S. Senate, and I'm just wondering how your experience might have shaped your reflection on these stories and your kind of looking back and selecting women to highlight in the book.
Well, I feel like we are so fortunate to have been born in Texas, of course, but also to have had these women willing to come and settle when it was really tough. And when I think of the obstacles that I've overcome, it was nothing compared to the real conditions they lived in. And I think it puts a perspective on it, because while I have overcome some obstacles for sure, there was never not a respect for women in our state and our nation, even in the earliest days. Women had a great deal of commerce. They ran businesses. They ran farms when their husbands were off fighting wars or writing constitutions. Our obstacles were more refined obstacles because they went through the real tough times physically, and we were then going through it in a much easier way, I think. Not easy, but easier than they had it.
Well, you talk about those tough times, and really, especially reading some of the earlier essays, if you just take sort of the amount of loss that a lot of the women suffered, you know, loss of their family life, loss of children. I mean, that's what kept really striking me, was just how much loss was part of their experience.
Oh, yes. Interestingly that you mentioned that, because these women had multiple children. My great-grandmother had 13. That was not unusual. Margaret Houston had 8. They just had a lot of children, and they lost children. They lost children in the runaway scrape. They lost children in Indian raids. The Comanches would kill children, too. And they lost them, of course, to the elements. And so they had big families without any anesthesia, I might add, and they lost a lot, but they kept this spirit, this can-do positive spirit. In fact, I want to just mention the name of the book, Unflinching Courage, came from a quote by Thomas Rusk. Now, Thomas Rusk was one of the two first Texas senators Obviously, Sam Houston was the other. But Rusk was the Secretary of War. And his quote just affected me so much. He said, "The men of Texas deserved much credit, but more was due the women." He wrote this in 1836, reporting on the Revolutionary War. He said, "Armed men facing a foe could not but be brave, but the women with their little children around them, without means of defense or power to resist, faced danger and death with unflinching courage." And that's what gave me the name of the book. And I think that he saw it in 1836 and recognized the extraordinary role that women were playing in the forging of Texas.
So if we can sort of leap ahead now to 2013 and sort of think about Texas as we know it today, what are the characteristics or sort of marks on the state that you sense and see now that you can kind of trace back to and through the line of the stories of these women?
Well, I think it is the optimistic, fun-loving spirit that still today is a Texas, it's a Texas factor. When I'm in Washington, everybody wants to go to Texas State Society functions because they're fun, because we're known for just having a great time. And I think the women, just in the last, say, 50 years, now, the first woman mayor of a major city in Texas was after 1950. So starting in 1950, it was those first women mayors and the women like Ann Richards and Barbara Jordan, the women that were forging ahead with a positive spirit. They were having fun. They were having a good time. At the same time, they were showing great wisdom and leadership. And the women mayors who came up, Kay Granger, who's still a member of Congress today, Lila Cockle, who was the first one from San Antonio, Kay Granger, of course, from Fort Worth, and then Carol Keaton, of course, in Austin, Annette Strauss from Dallas, and Kathy Whitmire from Houston. But they were courageous, but they were also fun-loving. And I think that fun-loving part in the face of overcoming obstacles and having a hard time, getting setbacks, is all a part of the Texas mystique. And it would be what I would write about is still here today because of the 19th century that imbued it on us, and we've passed it through the generations.
I think now in Texas, I mean, there is also a reality that for some women, the state has not evolved into a very easy place to live. I mean, I'm thinking of healthcare or some other issues where women have really been impacted in modern times. I mean, I'm wondering if you have a kind of a response to that.
Well, I think that, of course, no place is ever great for everyone. There will always be troubles. There will always be perhaps needs that are not met. But I think what I look at is that when we find those needs that are not met, it is the women who come up and make a difference in the leadership to address those issues. I mean, I addressed the issue when I was in the state legislature of fair treatment for rape victims, the equal credit rights for women to assure that a woman could get a loan and not have a discrimination against her. You know, you know these issues, and the women who come into the system address them. And I think where there are needs, women leaders will emerge, and we will make sure that we are addressing issues in a balanced way with the wisdom of our women leaders as well as our men.
Are there women on the scene today that you might want to add to your book? If you were to kind of keep the book going, who might you put in that category that you see on the scene right now?
Well, I think certainly these first women mayors, they were they were 20th century last half, but they were trailblazers. I look at Kay Granger, who's still in Congress, a leader in Congress. I'd certainly put her in that category. I think that in the 2000s, I think we're going to be looking now at not just political leaders, although I think we will have those. I think we will be looking at also the academic leaders, the women who will emerge to head our major universities, the women who are in business. The business successes are another of the next generation of trailblazers. I look around now at the CEOs of our major American corporations. It was unthinkable even 10 years ago that we would have the women CEOs of our major corporations that we do today, Pepsi and IBM and just so many now that are in the major big leagues. And so I look at Elaine Agathur as one who is just blazing trails and positive. She's a can-do Texas woman, if I ever knew one. And I think it's those kind of women that are going to be coming up. Lucy Billingsley here in Dallas also. It's just those kinds of trailblazers that are going to be crossing boundaries and going into the business sector now.
We just had graduation here at the University of Texas just this past weekend. And I'm wondering, you know, if a young woman graduate came up to you and said, oh, I want to follow perhaps in your footsteps in politics. I want to make a difference in Texas. I want to do something. What advice would you give to young women who may be about to enter public sector or politics or public service? What would you say to them in 2013?
I would say be sure you have a profession or an experience in business or the community, so you know what the problems are from the ground. Don't go into politics before you've had the grounding of actually being in the real world. I see sometimes people start too early and they don't really have a core belief that's forged from knowing what it's like to live with the regulations or the laws that are wrong for some reason, or in education. What's missing in education, you get it from being on the ground, knowing either because you have children or because you are on a school board, maybe, what the problems are from an experienced level. I think the women who start after they've had a really good grounding are the ones that are going to have the longevity.
Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison is the author of Unflinching Courage, Pioneering Women Who Shape Texas. Senator, we thank you so much for your time this morning.
Hey, Jennifer. I'm so glad to be with you and look forward to the book signings in Austin.